word from some of our proud sponsors. As a longtime coach, I know that sometimes your playbook could use a trim. And as a guy, I know that your balls could too. That's why we use Manscaped, the best in men's grooming. Do you want to chime in here? Or?
Hey, Star Wars fans and Rule of the Galaxy fans. It is Joe, and we are doing episode 251 of the Rule of the Galaxy podcast. We just had on the great Steve Sansweet from Rancho Obi-Wan to celebrate our 250th episode. So 251, we had to come back strong with another strong guest. And today, it is the founder of the Rule of the Galaxy podcast, my son, Joey Molinaro. How you doing, Joey?
I am good. Congrats on 250. That is wild. A lot of Star Wars talk going into it, and so something to be proud of for sure. But I'm good. Just had a coffee shop here in downtown Indy, away from the kids for a little bit. And yeah, ready to talk some Batch.
You got it. Yeah, we're going to, because Steve was not getting caught up on the Bad Batch, Joey and I wanted to make sure we covered not only the first three or four episodes, but also the latest episode, The Return, which just came out on Wednesday, where, well, let's face it, besides Tech, there was the return of the Bad Batch together. So, Joey, overall, before we get into this one episode, you know, I know you are a Rebels and somewhat Clone Wars fan. You're obviously a big Star Wars fan, but what have you thought about the Bad Batch so far this season and where it's going and finishing up?
Yeah, I was psyched after the first three episodes. I was really on the edge of my seat with episode three. And I mean, I was telling our mutual friend, Jack Harvey, that anytime that you get the Emperor within the first arc, you know, the first three episodes of the 15 episode run, that feels exciting. That feels good. So I was really, really pumped about that. And then, you know, these last 2 weeks, it's really been, you know, I know a lot has been made about the show kind of the past two seasons, because there's so many episodes that, you know, half of them or so would be kind of just like a filler or adventure of the week type of deal. But I think that they're doing a really good job of making them have that feel still in these last two episodes, but also you know that they're necessary.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to, like, okay, these are all necessary because, like, the one on Wednesday, for instance, you know, we had to see the relationship be mended between Crosshair and Hunter and the rest of the, you know, the Bad Batch. You know, that,
right.
Not a whole lot happened, but what happened is really important. And instead it's where, okay, now five episodes in, we know that Omega and Crosshair have escaped. We know that the whole Bad Batch is back together and that Crosshair seemingly is, you know, trying to make up for his sins in the past and say, hey, you know, I'm back in this. And Hunter seemingly has said, hey, you know, we're welcoming you back in. So now we go. Now I like to think that what we have set up here with them leaving, I forget the planet where they were, the snowy planet. Well, the snowy planet.
The snowy planet. Yeah, that is, gosh. Barton 5, or Barton 4, I believe, is the, yeah, Barton 4, where they just were with the snow creature and everything, yeah.
Yeah, so I like the thing now that once they're leaving there, they're taking off and they're heading back to Tantus, and we're really going to get it fired up, you know, we're going to get it back to Nala Se, and we're going to get back to Hemlock and really seeing what's all going on there with Necromancer, and, you know, we're really going to have 11 episodes and just pull out.
Yeah, yeah. So far we've had episodes called Confined, what's that? Paths Unknown, I believe. I believe that's what it was. Shadows of Tantus, A Different Approach, and now The Return. And just as a recap, I really love that I keep messing up the words of Nala Se. I keep saying Lana Se. Nala Se, Hemlock, Emery. All of those are key characters. I love where we're going with them. Like you said, seeing the Emperor back, seeing the struggle between the new stormtroopers and the old clone troopers. You know, I think there's some really good things brewing here, and I'm excited to see where it goes as well. I guess we'll just start with, yeah, you know, the crew The crew starts back off this week on the return back on Pabu, or as we call it on Rule of the Galaxy, Boca Raclone. You know, it's so it was really cool to see that they finally gave Crosshair his rifle back so he could go train. One of my favorite characters of the Clone Wars wrapped up into now Bad Batch, AZ. I love that little droid. He was in that arc where Fives and everything went wrong on Kamino. But he's back there. He's keeping track of Crosshair's, you know, percentage. He said you're 53% below average, right, on your shooting, and it's because of that hand thing that he's got going on. And
yeah,
we had talked about it last week that Hemlock also wears that glove and constantly is kind of flexing that right hand. And we still haven't found out what that's from. Is that from the poison that Hemlock has cured himself from, or you know, fixed himself from being able to be a poison by, and then that Crosshair got poisoned by while he broke away in Kamino? Is that just from the testing they're doing on the clone's hands? Don't know. But I thought that was cool to see that his shooting was having an effect from that, just from the very beginning there. And that Omega is kind of acting as that go-between him, Wrecker, and Hunter. She's the middleman between those as we start off this new episode.
I think I can see already like that they're setting up sort of, I feel like we're going to get a scene or a sequence where Crosshair is going to have to shoot accurately to save someone, to get them released from somewhere. And we're going to have that in the back of our head. We're like, oh man, we're going to know he's 53%. His hand is messed up. Yeah, we're going to have kind of a Han and Lando situation. Oh, wait, I thought you were blind. Something like that. Probably not the same kind of comedic effect we're thinking of with Family Guy, you know, where Peter just keeps shooting him over and over again. But I could see that coming down the way at a really tense, important moment where Crosshair is going to make a break. You know, is this the Crosshair that, you know, got the name Crosshair because he was such a lethal sniper, or is his name going to act up and he's going to be inaccurate? So could see that coming for sure. I just love the, you know, it's feels stupid to say, but like the look of everything, you know, it really does just look so good when they're coming in and out of planets and all the planets that they're on, and really, really impressive stuff.
It is. The artwork has improved season by season.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, think back to the really early Clone Wars days, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The Cartoon Network Clone Wars days, and just where it's going to come from there. So, no, I mean, I think that they're doing everything they can to tie these sequels together into it, and people are just going to have to like it or not. You're just going to have to accept it, that that's what they're doing with a series like this. And I mean, when you got the whole Necromancer project going on, that's going to be, it's at top of mind. I want to know what's behind those red lasers so badly. You know, they keep teasing it, but we haven't seen yet.
Well, you know, speaking of that, part of the conversation, well, I will flip back to this. So we, you know, the name of the return for this episode, we return to Pabu, Echo returns, we return to that outpost, the family, the Bad Batch is returning back to itself, right? So this title alone has so many different aspects to it. But speaking about those red lasers and everything that was keeping everybody back, the vault that the Emperor and Nala Se and everybody went into, finally got Nala Se right there. You know, Omega brings it up because they were wanting intel, you know, when Echo returns, he's wanting intel on things. He's got Nala Se's, you know, they've got Nala Se's data pad and all that. But if the one thing they really can't see or do is know what's in there, because even Emery and Omega were never allowed in there. Only Nala Se was allowed in there to go with the Emperor and Hemlock. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see. And I'm, you know, the M count and that area, how it's going to rotate over to the Mandalorian age, where they've talked about the M count and they've seen the cloning, to the Emperor returns, you know, an Exegol in the sequel. So I'm pretty pumped about seeing that. At first, I thought they were going to split up again. I'm sorry, go right ahead.
Well, is there any chance that we see Grogu behind those bars? Like, are we going to get an animated Grogu at all?
That is a good call. And a lot of people have been bringing up Grogu and saying how he could be dropped. I mean, we've already, you know, there's so many things that are going to possibly be happening, from him being picked up in the flashbacks on The Mandalorian back in the Clone Wars era, to could he drop back down in the sequels or to the Rey movie, for example, right? I mean, nobody's really clear, but I wouldn't mind it. If they're going to rope everything together, and that's one of the things we talked about on the show a few weeks ago, is if you're going to rope it all together, then bring it all together. Tie it all.
Will the timeline even work out, though? Because I know we flashed back to Mando Season 3 to see him on Order 66 be taken away. But we got left at that. We don't know where they were going. We don't know where he was then. Could he have been intercepted back from the Empire and taken?
Well, my nerddom's really going to come out here, because Ahsoka, when she first met Grogu, said there was a lot of time where it was just dark for him. Like, he has no recollection, can't recall anything. And if he was in some type of hibernation, some type of suspension, right? Like, where he's not in carbonite, because obviously they couldn't do anything to him. But if he's in one of those tubes for a long period of time and they're using him for samples and everything, that could match in. I mean, he's 50 years old by the time he gets to Mandalorian. Well, Mandalorian is 35 years or something like that after Revenge of the Sith. So it all matches up on time, I guess.
Yeah, so that would be the thing. It's just, we don't know where he was, and so they left us with that. So maybe there's something there that we'll find out, that they picked him off and got intercepted, and maybe we'll bring it back in the Bad Batch, where maybe that's what they're leading to. Maybe the Bad Batch is the ones who took Grogu back from Mount Tantus. You know, maybe
had to hide him,
gets a hold of him.
Right.
They take him to Mount Tantus to do that, to complete it. So he was escaped with, who's the Jedi? I know Ahmad Best played
this. Kelleran Beck. That was the Ahmad Best Jedi, yes.
So there you go. Maybe he escapes with Kelleran Beck. The Empire still tracks him down, intercepts him. They kill Kelleran Beck.
Yeah.
That's why we don't see him anymore. And then that's that dark period for Grogu, is because he's just some, you know, he's just a project doll. He's just a project rat. And towards the end here in Bad Batch Season 3, maybe they're the ones.
Yeah.
They take him from Mount Tantus, and Omega special, you know, whatever special about her, she knows, hey, we got to get this kid, we got to get this thing out of here. And they take him and hide him away. Because remember when Bad Batch was first coming around, and there was like one of the taglines of the thing was that they're protecting something really important. And it turned out to be Omega. But there was talk, and there was like rumors and speculation that, well, maybe it's Grogu. You know, maybe they're the ones who, and so maybe they're coming fully back around now to what people kind of speculated before Season 1, and they'll end that with Season 3.
I have no problem with it. Again, I'm a completionist when it comes to tying things together. There's a lot of people that'll say leave a lot of stuff empty, but if you're going to cross these eras, you might as well weave them and tie them together, in my opinion. And what a better way to do it than the current moneymaker for Lucasfilm and Star Wars, but Grogu, right?
Right, because I think we have to think story-wise and then dollars-wise. Like, story-wise, Grogu is a big key to all of this.
Yep.
And money-wise, he's a big key for Lucasfilm and for Disney right now. So, and then you have to ask yourself, you know, okay, this is great. This has been a lot of fun, Bad Batch. You know, having more Star Wars and having, but like, what's the big purpose? Like, why is the story being told? And I feel like that just fits a puzzle piece.
I think I brought this up recently. I think they are a vehicle to tell other stories. Like, we like the Bad Batch characters, right? But it's not like they're Luke, Han, and Leia, right? It's not like they're Anakin, Padme, and Obi-Wan. They're interesting characters that help tell a story. And the story is this transition from going from the prequels to the original trilogy. and how the clone troopers become stormtroopers and how the Emperor takes control and all those different things. And then now tying in M counts, necromancer, and everything else. So I'm going to hope that they're a useful tool. The tool is to tell the story through the eyes that we're given, and that's of the Bad Batch. So that's where I'm going to go with it anyway. I asked recently, is this going to end like Rogue One, right? Are we going to see one by one or all of them be killed off by the end of Bad Batch? Because where do they end up? Where do they go? We by the time we get to Rebels, we only see Rex and two other clones, Wolf and Gregor, out on that planet by themselves, right? Hunting another big worm, like we see here later on in this show. But so where did all the rest of them go? Bad Batch wouldn't have just disappeared unless they got killed off or something like that. So
I wouldn't be opposed to that either. I think it would make sense because then we don't have to wonder where they are and what happened to them. And also just, you know, raises the stakes. You know,
right.
Everybody loved that, like, sacrifice portion and the stakes of Rogue One. You know, it would be sad, yeah, but, I mean, I think at this point it's like, what else are they there to do? What's their life truly going to be like once they don't have these missions to do? So, yeah, up the stakes. Chill them off.
I agree. Then you have to wonder about Omega and how she wraps into Rey, which I have a feeling is part of that story that's tying in together. Because she can handle the M count, which, you know, that's what they're looking for. So
how is she supposed to tie in to her?
Well, they're looking for someone whose body won't basically kick back the blood or the essence of the Emperor, right? Force-sensitive blood, force-sensitive body that can control or use the M count, and it won't degrade or harm or damage their body. And Nala Se had been hiding all the time that Omega could do that, and that's why Hemlock's after her. But if you got to think about it, if they're finding this now, and the Emperor is trying to create those clones of himself or have children or what have you, like we see in the sequels, his son was not force sensitive, but he was through that M count carrying line, right? It's got to start somewhere. And to get to Rey, you've got to find that first body that's going to be able to handle the M count. So there's got to be some progression from Omega, I would think.
You mentioned it after, I think it was episode 4, where that one kid that they held that shot on for a while had those goggles of Rey's.
Yes.
But that would make her, like, she'd be too young for that, right?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure that I'm saying Omega would, well, because Omega's all of, 11 or 12 years old, something like that.
With the longer hair now, she looks older.
Yeah. She looks preteen, early teen. So, I mean, I don't know how that would work timing-wise, because... how old's Rey by the time we get to The Force Awakens?
She's like the same age as Luke and New Hope.
She's like 20
or 20. Yeah.
Okay. So that would have been, man, we're doing a lot of math here. 19 or 20, Return of the Jedi was 30 years before Force Awakens. So 10 years after The Force Awakens or after the Return of the Jedi. Oh man. There's a lot to go in there. I don't think the timeline doesn't work. And even if it's not her, they can at least use her body or her DNA to start passing that along. So I don't know. Just weird, random thoughts there. But we'll see. We'll see if it all ties up. Alfie keeps saying it is going to. Let's see if it does. I think one of the key things about this return episode was Crosshair and Hunter being able to throw those jabs back and forth and really go after each other to build that bond back up. And I think one of my favorite parts of that was Echo watching it happen while Omega wanted to stop it from happening. And Echo was kind of like being a mom to two kids, right? Saying, you're going to have to fight it out. It's going to be them. Let them go at it. Let them exchange the jabs because that's the only way they're going to get through it. And so I thought it was really cool. And then by the end, when Echo said, "Hey, I not even any bloodshed, right? I thought there'd be bloodshed on that. So I thought it was really cool to see that family being built back up that way, and knowing that it's not just pulling off a Band-Aid and going. You really have to work through some things. Not to say they worked through it all, but I did like to see them really bonding back as brothers again in this episode.
Yeah. I was skeptical. I was like, I don't really know if this is going to work out. I don't know if Crosshair is fully back in up until when Hunter fell through the ice. And true. When he fell through the ice and Crosshair had that visceral reaction, you know, that was not something that, especially, it seemed almost out of character, especially for Crosshair, you know, because he's very straight and narrow. He's very unbothered. You know, he's kind of Belichick-esque in terms of his emotion. But when Hunter fell through the ice, you know, you heard him yell for him, and he was very concerned. Right. And so then I was like, okay, for me, that was like, okay, he's folding back in. He's not looking at him as the enemy or as, you know, not being good soldiers, follow orders. He's like, that's my brother, and I got to help him. And it, you know, I thought that there was some poetry there about how, you know, Crosshair was on that planet when he killed that Imperial officer. Yep. And really kind of, I think, made the turn where he was like, I can't do this anymore. So you kind of had, you know, it's like poetry at rhymes where he did it before when he was working with the Empire. And then you see him come fully back around on the same place with Hunter. So I thought that was cool.
I think the Outpost episode from season 2 was one of the best episodes of Bad Batch last season. So coming back to here was great. Like you said, having those thoughts and memories go through Crosshair's mind was great. I think he really felt losing a Mayday who he worked so hard to try to save, that clone. And then, you know, putting those helmets up that were just thrown on the floor. Yeah. He was really symbolizing, like, I'm building a memorial to my fallen brothers, right? And you could see it was really affecting him, which I thought was really cool. And I want to ask you real quick, the bird, the vulture, whatever, that was in the Outpost episode in season two, and now it's back when Crosshair came. Back. I mean, you've got the owl with Ahsoka all through Clone Wars and then into the Ahsoka series and Mando, all that. You've got the wolf with Caleb, with Kanan Jarrus slash into Ezra, right? And then you've got this vulture for Crosshair. Filoni definitely likes to use animals in the wilderness to really tell stories and things like that and make them mirror the characters. It's very interesting.
Yeah, some symbolism yeah. there for sure. I was wondering that too. Almost kind of poetry again, because he was, you know, kind of almost left for dead there in season 2, and the vulture was swirling about above him. Yep. And then, you know, at this episode, kind of his redemption, it's like, hey, that's still there, but almost like a, hey, I see that you're still there, but I've made it to the other side. You know, I'm not going to let you get me. I know you're circling above, but
right.
I've made it to the other side. That's how I took it.
So real quick, in Book of Boba Fett, I believe, or was it Mandalorian? It's Mandalorian, where they had the crate dragon that they trapped down. It was very much like this big worm here. In the Rebel season, where Rex, Gregor, and Wolf are out there, they're trekking down a big worm, right? Now you have this one.
Yeah.
You had the one in Rise of Skywalker. Remember that big snake worm? Yep, the Ray Heels. And then all that going on, and then we have Dune 2 out, where they're going around these big worms. Is there some symbolism going on with all these worms that are everywhere in Star Wars and sci-fi? It's crazy.
And SpongeBob kind of started it all with that. I forget exactly what it's called.
Yes.
But the one that they go and conquer there. Star Wars, you know, they're definitely not afraid to kind of rehash things, whether it be giant space stations that are planet killers or worms that are coming out of the ground that the heroes have to defeat. So yeah, when I saw that, I was like, yeah, it's, you know, I guess Wrecker even kind of said it. Just like, you know, oh, it's a big monster or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
So I think that was a little so like, hey, yeah, we know we're doing this again.
No, I agree. I mean, I was just like, it seems like there's always a huge monster now in every kind of genre of Star Wars. So, I think we're going to see a big battle. I think, you know, we're 5 episodes into 15 total. Next week, we have another double feature. We have Infiltration and Extraction. So I don't know.
Got to be back on Tantus, right?
I'm going to hope. I hope they don't drag it out and make it to where we have to wait till the very end. I think it would be very cool to see what they're infiltrating and what they're extracting, because usually if you're going into all-out war, you're not extracting something, right? You're sneaking in, you're grabbing something, getting out. So maybe we'll get our first glimpse behind those red lasers and see what's in the vault there. So I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, we're 5 episodes in. We have not seen Cad Bane, Fennec Shan, or Asajj Ventress yet. We're going to see all 3 of them. And with your thought on Grogu, that stands out to me a lot, because in Mando, where was he first found? He was found with bounty hunters and criminals, right? Why wouldn't they take, just like Rey was sent off with some criminal kind of people at the beginning of Force Awakens, why wouldn't they take, if they want to really hide him, they're not going to hide him anywhere where Jedi are, where the rebels are. Maybe they're going to get Cad Bane or Fennec or Asajj to go into the underground. Again, we're just throwing it out there. If it's Grogu, maybe that's their gig instead of, you know, coming after Bad Batch or something like that. So I think that's some really cool tie-ins that could happen, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, those titles, Infiltration and Extraction, I mean, I don't know really what else it could be besides going back to Tantus and infiltrating that, and then Extraction being back-to-back double feature of, hey, they've infiltrated, now they're going to extract, right?
Right.
I mean, pretty simply put, I would think that that's what it would be. Like you said, I hope that's what it is. I really enjoy Tantus. I think there's like a very ominous, mysterious vibe to it. You know, I want to be back there. Whenever we're not on Tantus right now, I'm like, what's going on there? I want to be back there. I want Hemlock's weird, creepy, slithering style to be, you know, because I feel like that's just driving so much. And every time that's there, I'm on the edge of my seat of what they're going to show, what they're going to reveal, who's going to be there, what they're working on, more details on Project Necromancer. So, yeah, fingers crossed that, hey, maybe this, you know, we kind of finish the first half arc of it from there. And then, you know, the last half, who knows where the heck it could go? Because like you said, all those characters have to show up.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. And heck, Vader, Hera, Chopper, all are supposed to be in this series to go along with those 3 bounty hunters that I just mentioned. So
let's go full Rogue One. Let's have Vader just come and have him versus the Bad Batch, and he just they put up a valiant effort, but he just, you know, slaughters them and then cuts them down, and all the effort being they're just putting up a front so that Omega, whoever, can get Grogu away.
I love it. You know, one of Alfie's things was that Caleb Doom, who becomes Kanan Jarrus, was in the first episode of The Bad Batch.
Wouldn't have put him in there, I don't think, if they, you know.
Right. Could we get him back towards the end where he, Hera, and Chopper come in and help save the day of something?
That would be cool. To start off to
to go to Rebels.
Rebels. Yeah.
Yes.
Good call.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I know you're busy in the coffee shop. I know we just wanted to chat real quick and get some Bad Batch in since we weren't able to do it on the regular show this last week with Steve. Really appreciate you taking the time. I know we've got a lot we're looking forward to. I think Bad Batch is finally, it's finally coming to a place where every episode probably has some importance to it instead of the filler episodes or the adventure of the week episodes. Like you said, even though this one was kind of an adventure of the week, there still was some serious meaning behind it.
Right. It was necessary. It was an absolutely necessary, because, you know, you couldn't just have, which that scene, by the way, the one where Omega and Hunter and Wrecker reunite.
That was
real. I mean, I got a little choked up, you know, with
sure.
You know, I get it now, and I got two babies, and you know, just imagining caring after a kid like that, and then you finally get back with them. I really enjoyed that sequence there, and I liked how they left it open ended there with Crosshair and Hunter and Wrecker just kind of in a standoff looking at each other. But again,
right.
That's where the sweep was necessary.
Yep.
Because you couldn't just have them do that and then just hop right into, oh, yep, everything's good. We're just on to this. It's like, no, there's more going on many levels with those relationships that we had to see mend over. So we can fully trust Crosshair because if they're going into infiltration or whatever right now, you're like, I mean, Crosshair could easily throw him under the bus. We don't know. But now I think that's foregone. So, yeah, no problem.
You got it.
Glad to hop on. I feel like I'm always coming on like right around a milestone episode. So cool to be a part of. And I appreciate you guys.
You got it. No problem. Guys, for everybody, Joey, thanks for coming. For all of our regular guests and our followers, our listeners, thanks again. We had fun with this one. We'll talk more Bad Batch soon. Next time, we'll be with Mr. Ryan McGee of ESPN and the SEC Network. So we're just bouncing around from guest to guest. Joey, thanks again. And until next time, may the Force be with you.
You're listening to Rule the Galaxy.